This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America on this Africa edition of the program, What's at Stake in Nigeria's Upcoming Elections? Hello again, I'm Carol Castillo. Voters head to the polls to elect a new president and parliament on February 25th in Africa's most populous nation and largest economy. According to Reuters, there has been growing frustration over spreading insecurity, from kidnappings for ransom in the Northwest to a 13-year insurgency in the Northeast, separatist violence in the Southeast, and ethnic tensions between herders and farmers in the North Central region. In addition, Nigerians are struggling with surging inflation and are fed up with endemic corruption linked to large-scale oil theft. Africa's top oil producer is a key Western ally in the fight against Islamist insurgents, many linked to the Islamic State in West Africa. Current President Muhammad Buhari, who will complete his second and final term in May, is not on the ballot, even though a total of 18 candidates are vying for the presidency. The main contest is between Bola Tinubu from the ruling All Progressives Congress, or APC, Atiku Abubakar of the main opposition People's Democratic Party, the PDP, and the Labour Party's Peter Obi, who has galvanized a broad cross-section of mostly younger Nigerians impatient for change. Well, joining me to discuss the political landscape in Nigeria in the run-up to the pivotal elections, I am joined by two preeminent analysts. Peter Lewis is the Warren Weinstein Chair of African Studies at the Johns Hopkins University School of Advanced International Studies. Professor Lewis has directed the school's Africa Studies program since 2006 and also oversees the school's Middle East program. He has written extensively on economic adjustment, democratization, and civil society in Africa, focusing on democratic reform and political economy in Nigeria. And Ebenezer Obadari. He is the Douglas Dillon Senior Fellow for Africa Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. Before joining CFR, he was professor of sociology at the University of Kansas. Professor Obadari is also a senior fellow at the New York University School of Professional Studies Center for Global Affairs and a fellow at the University of South Africa's Institute of Theology. And both gentlemen join me via Microsoft Teams. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Let me start with you, Professor Lewis. The old saying goes, if Nigeria sneezes, the entire continent catches a cold. There's a lot at stake in these upcoming elections. Talk about how you would characterize the mood in Nigeria in the run-up and what is, in fact, at stake in your view.
Thank you. Well, it's really a crucial time for Nigerians. As you know, it's the most populous country on the continent and the largest economy. And Nigerians have certainly expressed recently a very somber mood. There have been two major recessions in the last 8 years, the most recent precipitated by the COVID pandemic, downturn in oil prices, and inconsistent economic policies. And perhaps even more concerning is the downward spiral in the security situation domestically. Multiple insurgencies, violence between herders and farmers, as you referenced in the introduction, widespread banditry and crime really spanning the entire territory, and local communal violence. And so Nigerians have expressed a great deal of pessimism about the direction of the country and a great deal of concern about problems of governance. In the most recent Afrobarometer survey conducted in the country less than a year ago, 90% of Nigerians said the country is going in the wrong direction, and presidential approval ratings were at an all-time low. So this just gives us a sense of the problems and the frustrations that citizens are expressing, and also the possibility of and hopes for a change in the election.
Turning to you, Ebenezer Obadari, so hope for change, given the deteriorating security situation, the downturn in oil prices, the COVID pandemic repercussions. What are your views with regard to what's at stake in this election?
Thank you for the question. Just like previous elections, everything is at stake. Questions of governance are at stake. Corruption is at stake. the quality of the political elite, the political process in its entirety, regionalism, problems of restructuring, security, the economy itself, youth angst. There's a sense in which because Nigeria has not definitively resolved, let alone come to terms with many of these problems, there's a sense in which they get rolled over. And what that means is that every election, at least since 1999, when the country became a democracy again after a long military interregnum, it means that every election is more or less a referendum on all the major issues at stake in the Nigerian political process. Everything is at stake. And I can predict from where I'm sitting right now that if things don't change, the next election in 4 years will also be about the same set of issues that we are talking about right now.
Thank you for that. And back to you, Peter Lewis. Let's talk about the main candidates and their chances for prevailing. Analysts say there are no clear ideological differences between the two major parties and that competition for dwindling oil revenues, patronage, and ethnic rivalries typically play a bigger role in Nigeria's elections. Talk about what your assessment is of the candidates, the main candidates, and their odds.
Well, listeners will recall that from 1999, when the Fourth Republic was inaugurated or initiated after decades of military rule, from 1999 to about 2015, the People's Democratic Party was the leading party, which held the presidency, a majority in both houses of the legislature, and most governorships. This was overturned in 2015, and there was a rotation in power. Muhammadu Buhari defeated the incumbent Goodluck Jonathan, and the PDP lost its commanding position both in the legislature and in the states, although it remains a viable force. So we now have a party system which is dominated by the two parties, the former opposition APC, All Progressives Congress, which is now the ruling party, and the PDP, which has moved into opposition. The PDP has nominated Atiku Abubakar, who's a former vice president from the northeastern part of the country, Muslim. And the ruling APC has nominated Bola Ahmed Tinubu, a former governor of Lagos State, Yoruba, also Muslim from the southwest. So those are the two dominant party candidates. But we have an insurgent candidacy this time from Peter Obi, who's a former governor of Anambra State and who has hitched his fortunes to the Labour Party. Now, normally the Labour Party would be a minor party and there wouldn't be much traction here. But under the current circumstances where there's such widespread discontent and so many things at stake, really at an accentuated level, as Ebenezer has flagged, Peter Obi's candidacy has attracted a great deal of excitement and enthusiasm, particularly among younger voters. And you can see a sort of palpable excitement and energy on the streets and attached to his campaign. So there are questions being raised about whether Obi could overturn the political establishment and really succeed in a reform candidacy. He is not a populist in the sense that we traditionally use that term or that we use that around the world today. He's somebody who's running as a reform candidate who will bring better governance and better administration and reduce corruption and more efficiency to government. And he references both his time in the governorship and his business career as qualifications. So that's the general setting, and it is shaping up to be a remarkably interesting and potentially turbulent race.
An interesting and a potentially turbulent race, Ebenezer. I want you to pick up where Peter left off. I just want to say first that I have a friend who is married to a Nigerian, and she is saying that there is so much anticipation. There's a lot of hope for Peter Obi, but there's also a fear of violence. Do you think that Peter Obi has a credible chance, or is this a pipe dream and entrenched interests will eventually prevail? What is your take?
Thank you for the question. I would hate to puncture anybody's balloon at this moment, but in as much as I understand what Peter Obi stands for, and in as much as being a student of the Nigerian political process, I can see why majority of young people have rallied around him. I don't think the political map favors him. Peter mentioned something earlier about the party on which is running, first and foremost, the Labour Party. The Labour Party's fortunes track the fortunes of workers' movements in Nigeria generally. And the long and short is that workers' movement in Nigeria over the last two decades, they've lost traction, and the workers' movement has not been the force that it used to be. Definitely not the force that took on the military in the early 1990s when the military canceled the nationwide election. So there's a lot going on there. Having said that, he has tapped into something. And so there are two ways in which I think you can look at the candidacy of Peter Obi. There's a sense in which the movement of mostly young people that he has galvanized actually predates him. It's called the obedience. But when you look at the obedience, you think about the group of people protested under the banner of NSAS in October 2020. You go back to the people who protested under the Save Nigeria group during the attempt to remove an ailing Yar'Adua from office and install a president in his place. You go as far back as the structural adjustment riots of 1985. So there's a lot that has come together to make what we now call the obedience. So the argument there being the obedience actually predates Peter Obi, if you think historically like that. So that's the first point. The second point is that I don't think we should forget that Peter Obi himself is a legitimate member of the mainstream political elite. 4 years ago, he contested as vice presidential running mate to Abubakar Atiku. And until this time last year, we shouldn't forget that Peter Obi was running to be a presidential candidate of the People's Democratic Party. So there's a lot that he has tapped into, but I'm very skeptical. Even though I see what he stands for, I get why people like him, I understand popular frustrations, I don't think the party is there for him to the presidency. I might be wrong, and maybe Peter sees things differently. I just don't see him winning the election as things stand.
Well, before we go to a break, let me get Peter to weigh in to see if you agree, Peter, that basically this is a pipe dream. Peter Obi doesn't really have a chance against the structural impediments of the system.
I would never contradict Ebenezer on the lineage of people's movements and popular protests. But no, there is a basis here. We can have a healthy debate and a healthy conversation. There are mixed signals here. Everything that Ebenezer has said is absolutely clear in terms of Obi's foundations in the establishment. He's maybe perhaps not as much of a reform candidate as he pretends to be and all the rest of it. At the same time, there have been a number of well-conducted credible polls in recent weeks, which show Obi with a clear plurality, not a majority, but a clear plurality from intending voters. And one poll after another, there are now three or four of them, affirm this same result, suggesting that he could potentially win a plurality, which is all that's needed if you have a distribution among different regions in a first round with more than two candidates. So there is a path to victory for Peter Obi if there is sufficient breadth of support across different parts of the federation and different regions. So on the one hand, we can look at the polling and we see a large number of uncommitted voters who don't identify with the mainstream political parties. We see a lot of voters who say that they are not going to answer polls about who they're going to vote for. So a lot of don't know or not answering voters. And so that leaves us with an impression that there is a large body of potential voters who are up for grabs. That's one possibility. So we see a path to victory. The other possibility, however, is, as Ebenezer points out, that the traditional parties have ground organization, have big war chests, and have established political identities and even material relationships with various bodies of voters that make that a challenging path.
We'll have more in just a moment, but first, you are listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Castiel. My guests are Professor Peter Lewis, from whom you just heard, Chair of African Studies at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies, and Professor Ebenezer Obadiari. He's Senior Fellow for Africa Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. We are discussing what's at stake in Nigeria's upcoming presidential and parliamentary elections. This is a reminder that you may download the show at voanews.com. You may also follow us on Twitter at @Carol_Castiel or connect with us on Facebook at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Well, here's a shout out to a loyal listener and Facebook fan Nkanu Ekpe from Cross River State in the mighty Nigeria. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. You may also send an email to encounter@voanews.com. So back to our discussion. Turning back to you, Ebenezer Obadere, let's take a look at some other factors. There's a currency crisis. The country's in the middle of swapping its currency from old Naira to new Naira notes. Some opposition politicians are telling voters to vote against the APC to protest the issue and the confusion it's causing. To what extent is this issue having any impact on the election?
I think it's a secondary issue whether or not it's going to have an impact on the election. The primary concern for me is the impact it's having on ordinary people. We can debate the merits otherwise of this particular policy, but I think most people can agree that the timing could not have been poorer. You're talking about a country where logistics are always going to be a challenge, where the Independent National Electoral Commission is always under criticism for the way it handles logistics. Most people have always had their doubt about the way law enforcement intervenes in the election. All those things were there, and then you have this policy which has basically snuffed the economic life out of the country. People are irate, students are on the streets, the universities are closed. A number of people have been killed by law enforcement and soldiers trying to pacify the protesters. It's a very bad time to be in Nigeria right now. I speak to people on an everyday basis. I have family in Nigeria, and all they say is we don't have money. We can't withdraw money from ATMs. We are getting conflicting signals from the authorities. Various governments, state governments and local authorities have taken the central bank to court. President Buhari came out with a statement that has not been helpful. So there are all kinds of interpretations about, you know, why this is going on right now and whether this was designed to help, you know, one of the political candidates. And I don't want to go into that. But I worry less about the impact this will have on the election and worry more about what will happen to Nigerians in the short term. People are suffering. This might be a good policy on paper in terms of its actual implementation and in terms of its impact on the everyday lives of Nigerians. It's been an absolute disaster.
A good policy on paper, but in reality, a disaster. Peter Lewis, how do you see this issue and its impact on the election?
I quite agree. I mean, I think it just compounds the sense of chaos and decline that many people are experiencing. But I can tell you that in 20 years of polling under the Afrobarometer, Nigerians have never been so negative about the state of the country. And people are finding it difficult to move by road between towns and cities in most parts of the country because of concerns about armed robbery and kidnapping. There are many communities that are highly insecure. The fatality rates are shocking, and other kinds of abuses are taking place. And the recurring rolling economic recessions, which are partially attributable to external factors, but also substantially arising from poor economic management. And so there is a sense that certainly the Buhari administration over 8 years has not yielded the results that people hoped when they voted for Buhari as a change candidate in 2015. And we certainly see it in the public views in terms of rating presidential performance and trust in the presidency. So it's very clear that people feel very beleaguered and largely defeated and let down by the political leadership. And there's a deep sense of anger and pessimism. So the currency swap is just throwing an additional layer of chaos and massive, massive dislocation and inconvenience into an already toxic brew. And how this will play out politically, of course, is also part of the conversation that we're having here.
So back to you, Ebenezer Obadere, in terms of election integrity, Nigeria has a history of electoral fraud. There's going to be, however, international observers, ECOWAS, the EU. There are many civil society groups. How do you think the actual polling will take place? Will the observer groups and security be sufficient to prevent violence and widespread fraud? Do you think violence could, in fact, occur?
That's a great question. To just speak on a more positive note now, the management of election has actually been one of the bright spots in an otherwise very dark landscape. If you look at it historically, since the country returned to democratic rule in 1999, just in terms of logistics and ordinary management, the operations of the elections, things have actually gotten better. That's number one. Number two, the Independent National Electoral Commission has actually become more and more independent. So those are two bright spots, as I mentioned earlier, on an otherwise very dark landscape. So I think there will be wrinkles still on the fabric, but I expect that on the whole, the National Electoral Commission will be able to pull off another successful election. In terms of violence and security, another maybe good news again is that from a very high level of insecurity this time last year, so high that there were actually doubts being expressed as to whether or not the election will hold. Up till about 2 months ago, we actually got to a point where there was assurance that the election would hold. The election was still hold. 2 months ago, the circumstances were far more auspicious than they are right now. And as Peter mentioned earlier, the only thing that has sort of thrown a spanner in the works is this cash swap that, frankly, nobody is able to justify. It's just absolutely ridiculous. And it's increased popular anxiety. It's made people more frustrated. It's increased the level of insecurity and uncertainty in the country. And to the extent that we are talking about an election holding in about another couple of weeks, I don't think that government is in a position to smooth out those wrinkles until the election. As far as violence on the day of the elections, I would expect the usual level of low-level violence that you've historically had in connection with elections in Nigeria. There'll be ballot snatching in some places. There'll be miscreants and ruffians who will commit violence, across the country. I think that's par for the course. People expect that. The only thing is if there is violence on the scale that will make people worry about the fairness and the freeness of the election, I don't anticipate that. The only thing that can lead to high-level violence in the aftermath of the election is if people perceive that the election has been conducted with minimum integrity, that the election has been rigged in favor of a particular candidate. I think if there is perception that the election has been freely and fairly conducted, I don't think there will be a general violence in the aftermath.
And Peter Lewis, in the interest of time, I'm going to give you the last word.
Thank you. Well, here, Ebenezer and I completely agree. I think there are three factors. Number one, you now have two parties. It really is a competitive system. Some of these parties have their own zones, their own strong areas, but in many areas they're competitive, and that induces a degree of transparency, and it almost cancels out some of the advantages of rigging and vote buying and so forth. That was not the case in, say, 2007 when the election was really heavily rigged and it was a fiasco. So now you have a competitive system. You've developed over the last 12 years or so, a culture of transparency and a culture of citizen participation and even oversight at the polling places so that people are expecting better conduct of the elections. And INEC, the Independent National Electoral Commission, has improved its procedures, its professionalism, and its logistics over the years. So I think that the chances are that we'll see an orderly and generally well-conducted election. The biometric certification of voters, biometrically linked voter cards, electronic transmission of votes also undercut some of the channels for rigging and misconduct and fraud which we've seen in the past. So I think those elements are positive elements. And for the most part, it is likely that many areas will be secure enough to conduct elections. Ironically, it's in the East where secessionist Biafran groups are advocating for boycotts and trying to suppress participation because they're pushing a stronger, more radical agenda that we might get a suppression of votes. And that's, of course, Obi's heartland district. Nonetheless, I do think that the chances for credible elections that will be accepted broadly by Nigerians are there, although we would anticipate pockets of disorder and some violence and some protest.
On that note, I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this Africa edition of Encounter, and we shall be following the run-up to the elections and certainly the aftermath as well. I'd like to thank my guest, Professor Peter Lewis. He's Chair of African Studies at the Johns Hopkins University School of Advanced International Studies, and Ebenezer Obadere. He is a Senior Fellow for Africa Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. Encounter was produced in Washington with technical assistance From Rick Pantaleo, I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another encounter on The Voice of America.